Okay, another day, a lot of news. The virus marches on, as viruses always do. They couldn't care less about all this noise we're reporting on, not in the least. Some of the stories that are of interest, there are a lot of them up there. News is up, all posted. CDC changes coronavirus testing guidance. Asymptomatic people no longer require a test. Now, Tony Fauci says he's got some concern about that new change in coronavirus testing guidelines. The CDC, meanwhile, says it was pressured from the top on down to change those guidelines. So, lots of fun times in the CDC, I'm sure. California Governor Newsom, Nancy Pelosi's nephew, announces a mass test increase in the state. Mayor de Blasio says New York City restaurants may resume inside dining in 2021. Watching the Sturgis motorcycle rally, over 500,000 bikers, 70 coronavirus cases are now linked to the event. It's not necessarily to prove they occurred or have occurred or did occur because of the event, but they're linked to it. Okay. Here's one. Face masks actually make you stupid. You'll have to read that one. I'm not going to even go there. Half masking may increase coronavirus risk. There's another one. Now they're talking about the disposing of face masks and how it could cause an environmental disaster because they're not biodegrading like most things probably would. There's something about them. The good ones last. So there's that. And here's what Henry and I were talking about a long time ago. With the thickening of blood in coronavirus victims and clotting, right? Not good. They are now suggesting that blood thinners could reduce the deaths among coronavirus patients. Well, yeah, obviously. And I suggested long ago that maybe anybody who is diagnosed or even thinks they have coronavirus ought to start taking one aspirin a day. It will help thin the blood if you happen to be one of those people where the blood is a problem. Hello, Henry, and welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. Good to be back. A lot of activities. Actually, a couple of stories you mentioned, I was definitely planning on talking about today. The
good.
CDC changing its numbers, as well as what's going on with Sturgis. Those are both topics of interest. And and probably the CDC one is probably the biggest one, that scientists are getting ready to revolt. They have basically realized beyond any doubt that the CDC is not a reliable source, that basically Trump has taken over, and Dr. Trump is calling the shots, and he's using Scott Atlas as the new guy that has no background on infectious diseases. He's the guy that kind of looks at MRIs and for in the neurology department before he retired. And so he's got zero background. And,
this is like DeJoy being put in charge of the Postal Service. Same kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, in this case, he's on the task force, and apparently he's heard Trump put out too much testing, just like he did with Russia. If you can find those emails for Hillary, he does the same thing, too much testing. And then he doesn't have to tell his guys directly. They can just listen to him or read his tweets or basically get his directions over the airways one way or another, and then go and carry them out. And then, you know, Trump will notice that, oh, CDC changed their recommendations now. They don't they don't think it's necessary to be tested if you're asymptomatic and have been exposed to a known positive. And, you know, that directly contradicts the CDC's acknowledgement that there are a lot of asymptomatic cases, and the asymptomatic cases can transmit. And that you really need to do contact tracing in the contacts, even if they don't have symptoms. And now they're essentially trying to say that that's not necessary. And the argument is, I mean, when you hear the argument, you know that these guys are just making it up as they go along. The argument right. is that if you get tested and you get a false negative, then you'll be positive, but you'll think you're negative, and therefore you'll go ahead and behave as if you're negative, and you'll pass the virus along. So instead of getting you the rare false negative and give you false information, they're not going to give you any information. they're going to just say, well, you don't have symptoms, don't worry about it.
Right.
And go about your business and spread the virus. And it's, you know, that following the nonsense on the convalescent antibodies has the scientific community pretty well convinced that the CDC is not a reliable source for scientific suggestions or guidance. They're just a mouthpiece for Trump to spread propaganda, pure propaganda, nothing to do with science, just to come up with a talking point for this week's convention.
Is
what the convalescent antibodies are for. And then the reduction in testing is to get the numbers to start to go down and claim success. That, you know, the less you test, the lower the numbers, and therefore the more control that the government has over the virus. And, you know, his plan is working. And so, you know, it's, I mean, scientists, you know, have been pretty, suspicious of Trump all along, because, you know, he just only lies all the time, and most scientists are trying to get to the truth, and Trump just wants a little piece of data that he can manipulate and mislead and just bend it and turn it around to his advantage and put it out there, and he'll get his followers to believe it, and they'll just go ahead and say, hey, you don't need to wear masks. This is all a hoax. It's not real. The death certificates, they just put COVID down so they can get a reimbursement. And they just have literally a parallel universe made of a bunch of, you know, just flat out lies that are built upon other lies. And, you know, I had said that Trump likes the big lie, but he's taking it to the extreme where, I mean, it's just, it really has created a parallel universe. So the CDC, I mean, scientists around the world can read the nonsense that they're putting out, and they know that that has nothing to do with science and everything to do with Trump. And they're basically, you know, destroying the reputation of the CDC, along with the reputation of the United States in the scientific community. They're
correct.
Just kind of, I mean, they pity the United States now. They just kind of shake their heads and they can say, what happened? How did this happen? And a lot of the scientists are kind of wondering the same thing, is that how one person can be such a wrecking ball. And he keeps going, and he's got his enablers.
The ever-ready president.
They keep him, you know, fueled up there, so he makes this announcement, pronouncement, or what he's kind of using. Russia is his model. So Russia says, oh, don't worry about, you know, the COVID cases. You just get a doctor to say that they didn't die from COVID. And then you get your death rate down. Mm-hmm. You can go and say how low the fatality rate is because, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a lot of dead people, but it's not from COVID. It's just, you know, a coincidence. But, and that's, that's kind of the new news, but just to give you an idea, the numbers are moving, you know, along pretty much at the same pace. The number of cases being announced is a bit lower. It's closer to the 40-something thousand a day. It had gotten up to 50,000. And that is probably due in part to some reduced testing. The death rate is not going down. Yesterday, you know, I said it was right around 1,200. Today it's a little over 1,200. There's probably another update coming from California. So it's already more today than it was yesterday, but mm-hmm. it might be getting closer to 1,300. By the time California does their update. And the U.S. set another milestone. It kind of depends on what.
Yes, yes.
What,
milestone.
What service, but yeah, 80,000, or I'm sorry, 180,000 dead now, some of the sites like the Johns Hopkins, the, Worldometer had it at 180,000 deaths, several days ago. But you know, it's well on its way to 200,000 deaths because, like I said, it's a little over 1,000 a day. That's during the week, so you know it's in the ballpark of 5,000 a week or so, 5,000-6,000 a week. So it takes right. it takes a month to. Come up with 20,000, and 20,000 would bring the total up to 200,000. So there should be 200,000 dead by the end of next month, unless there's a dramatic decline. Now the CDC last week said there was going to be a decline this week. You know, they're sounding like Trump. They go, they make these predictions, and even if they only go 1 week out, they seem to be wrong. So there hasn't been any decline in the death rate. The deaths have been above 1,000, and this week they're above 1,000. They were above 1,000 yesterday. They were above 1,000 today. They generally get higher during the week until they get to the weekend. So they'll mm-hmm. probably be above 1,000 tomorrow and above 1,000 on Friday. Right. And the prediction of the CDC will be, you know, on a par with Trump, just utter nonsense. So speaking of utter nonsense, you mentioned yesterday, oh, there have only been 20 cases from Sturgis. You know, that sounds pretty good. Not that much activity. Then today, he got another story. He got up to 70-something, and New Hampshire put out a press release today. And title of the press release is potential community exposures connected to positive cases of COVID at Sturgis, South Dakota motorcycle rally. Mm-hmm. And this is today, and it says New Hampshire Department of Health is notifying residents about potential exposures related to the Sturgis, South Dakota motorcycle rally held right. August 7th through 16th. Now, if you look at a map, New Hampshire's not all that close to South Dakota, okay? But New Hampshire says there have been more than 100 confirmed cases associated with the Sturgis event, including 6 New Hampshire residents. So they've already got 6 confirmed ones in New Hampshire. Like I said, right. New Hampshire's not really next door to South Dakota. And New Hampshire is recommending that all New Hampshire residents who travel to Sturgis for the motorcycle rally get tested for COVID-19, which is not what the CDC says. And they should also quarantine and monitor for symptoms for 14 days upon the return to New Hampshire, even if they test negative. Per the state's travel guidance, all individuals traveling anywhere outside of New England are reminded to quarantine for 14 days. So they're basically putting out this warning that there's a problem with the motorcycle event. They've already come up with 6 positives in New Hampshire. They expect more. And they put out that warning. And, you know, again, New Hampshire is not only not very close to South Dakota. New Hampshire's a teeny tiny state. It doesn't have a whole lot of people either. And they've already got 6 positives that they've linked to Sturgis. So, you know, the source that came up with 20 yesterday for, for I don't know, you know, the entire country. And New Hampshire's already got 6.
I had a question. I have not heard yet what New Hampshire's public school policy is going to be. Do you know anything about that? The New England schools?
No.
Yeah, it varies.
Well, a little bit. I mean, you mentioned, that was, I think we're leaning towards having in-class instruction. And the main reason they're leaning towards that is they have been testing and they have been doing contact tracing. They have their rate down. They're about 1%. So 1% of the tests that they do in New York are positive. And the numbers in places like Florida are 10 times that amount. And the CDC kind of says, you know, you should at least do enough testing so that your positive rate is below 5%. And California is around 5% now, 5 or 6%. And they're talking about boosting testing because they know the 5%.
That's what the governor said.
Right. Because they know that the 5%, they're still missing a lot. And if you got your numbers down to a level which is in the 5% rate, well, then you got a reasonable chance of doing contact tracing and controlling the spread to some degree. And that's the reason the CDC originally said that you should be doing contact tracing on anybody that was a contact. And in fact, the airlines have that. That's their policy. The airline policy is that if you have had contact, if you're a contact of a known positive, you're not supposed to fly. You know, they say don't come if you're, and they didn't say don't come if you've got symptoms. They said don't come. So a bunch of organizations are basically trying to do contact tracing. Right. And then the CDC comes out with their new guidance, which, as you said, it was supposed to be coming from the top and apparently is related to the fact that Scott Atlas, the Fox News commentator, academic, that he is on the task force, and he doesn't think you really need that much more testing. He says there's too much testing. It's all overblown. There's nothing to worry about.
He didn't want to lose his job.
And so his presence is being felt by stupid revisions by the CDC that basically has lost the scientific community. And actually, they lost Cuomo. Cuomo said today, he's not following their recommendation. They're going to continue to do contact tracing, and they're going to continue to test people that are contacts of known positives, regardless of whether they have symptoms or not. Because the virus doesn't care what the CDC says. The virus doesn't care what Scott Atlas says. The virus doesn't care what Donald J. Trump, a.k.a. Dr. Trump, they don't care what he says. They know he's an idiot anyway. They actually like what he says because he's the one helps them get around. You know, he's the one that says, oh, I don't want to wear the mask. Don't worry about the mask. Now, well, maybe you should wear the mask. Oh, but you should wear the mask, but I don't have to wear the mask. And the people that come visit me don't have to wear masks. And he just, you know, takes two different positions. And the public is just confused, and they just pick whatever position they want.
Sometimes he takes three different positions. He's
right.
Very talented.
Right. And so that's part of the reason the near-term outlook is not really positive. Problems are showing up in the schools. And the schools are having a lot of trouble doing sports, and especially with something like football. And you get players on the team that are positive, and then, you know, technically they're not supposed to be playing. And then technically the contacts of the positives aren't supposed to be playing either. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you got a football team and you got one positive, then you probably have 10 or 20 or 30 contacts on the team. And so if they don't play, then you don't really have a team. So they play even though they shouldn't. And they end up spreading the virus, and it ends up shutting down the season. One of the high schools here just made an announcement that they they're not going to be able to play any football until, I think now, the second or third week in September, because they got a positive on the team, and they're concerned about that. But those numbers are going to keep popping up. And that's why I was saying that things don't look that good, because the schools are trying to, work their way through the virus. And it's not really working out very well. That I'd mentioned yesterday.
No, sir, it's not.
University of Alabama has something like I think it's 500 positives now on campus. I'm not sure who they test, whether everybody gets tested or. But even if everybody's getting tested, they've already got 500 positives. And if you kind of go through the numbers, at least prior to today, the contacts of those 500 positives are supposed to quarantine. And so they can either say, well, we're going to tell the contacts to quarantine because we're trying to control the virus. Or we can tell the contacts, well, if you don't have symptoms, you don't have to worry about it. Because the CDC said so, and we thought the virus was listening to the CDC. So if the CDC says it's okay, you got nothing to worry about. Because if we tested you and we actually get a false negative of somebody that's positive, they might go ahead and infect people.
That argument is
one of the dumbest arguments I've ever heard.
That
they don't want to test because they might get a wrong result. And so they just won't test, period. So nobody will have any idea whether they're infected or not. And not only won't they have any idea whether they're infected or not, the CDC says, don't worry about it. go about your business. You don't have to quarantine even if you're in contact. And you don't have to bother getting tested. And then if you get symptoms, you have to worry about it. But they already know that you got the highest level of virus before you get symptoms. So that if you get symptoms, you'll know that, well, it was a bad idea to to do what I ever did in the 3 days before I got symptoms, because I was loaded with virus and I was shedding the virus, and all the places I was at, I probably infected people. But that's water under the bridge. They've already been infected. At the time, I didn't know I was infected because I didn't have symptoms and I was told not to test. So the plan is idiotic. Mm-hmm. It has no science basis. Scientists know it's idiotic. I mean, they're epidemiologists. They know how the virus transmits. They know that people get virus before they develop symptoms. And that's why they've been saying all along that one of the problems is we don't test enough. We need to be doing more testing. And Trump is telling his contact on the committee that you're testing too much, and just tell the task force to stop the testing. He shouted it from the rooftops. Actually, he says it in Biden ads. I mean, Biden plays it all the time. No, we're testing too much, or whatever he said. Yeah, stop the testing. And that's his position. And now it's the CDC's position. And, you know, I don't know who the CDC thinks they're fooling. I mean, they quietly did this. And it's apparently it's not even at their website yet. But they put out the word that you don't need to be tested. I guess they might not want to put it in writing because, you know, they know that in the future, when they talk about the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, and they'll talk about how the U.S. had the largest number of cases and the largest number of deaths, and they, you know, are ever, you know, a very stellar reputation in the area of virology and epidemiology and testing, and they're usually the gold standard that other countries look to as to how they should control outbreaks and how they could be like last. How they can have more cases and more deaths than any other country in the world when the outbreak started in China. And they're about as far away from China as any country in the world is. They're on the other side of the world, actually, with oceans on either side. And they managed to get up to be number one in the world.
It's those totally frequent flyer miles the virus has.
Right. So, and anyway, in any event, Trump is trashing the U.S.'s reputation, and the rest of the world is just kind of feeling sorry. And what's going to happen is the school boards are going to try to have in-class instruction per Trump's recommendation or order or threat that, you know, he's going to withhold funding, even though he doesn't really fund education. But he's going to withhold funding if they don't offer the in-house classes, and the teachers know that they're at risk, and they're talking about filing lawsuits or just refusing or change occupations because they know it's lunacy. It's crazy because it's not going to work. They know how infectious the virus is. They know the schools aren't designed to do social distancing.
Right.
They know they're in an area that's got a very high level of virus. And
Henry,
they know that...
If 80% of the people infected, I'll assume children are relatively close to that projection. If 80% of the students who are infected are asymptomatic, there are going to be a lot of students who don't know they're shedding and carrying. I don't think they're going to test every student. I've never heard that, never read it.
Oh, no. Some schools are planning on doing that, are actually doing that. Because they know that's what they need to do.
The bottom line is
they've already tried doing a half-assed job. That's what they did with the earlier lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the U.S. got to be number one in the world. Because the other countries said, if we're going to do the lockdown, we're going to do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to drive down the level of the virus. So that when we take the lockdown off, we can control the virus. The U.S. didn't do that. The U.S. came nowhere near that. They put the lockdown on. They gave them, the CDC gave them the instructions as to what you need to, what benchmarks you have to meet to ease the restrictions. Trump told his governors, don't worry about it. I said it's okay. And they said, sounds good to me. And they just took the restrictions off when they were loaded with virus. And that's why if you go through the list of the cases that gets updated every day, and you want to know who's dying, you can go through the list and say, well, which states have, let's say, 30 or more deaths today?
Mm-hmm.
And if you run through the list, you say, well, California had 132. Illinois had 37. Florida had 155. Louisiana had 32. Texas had 229. Georgia had 49. Ohio had 48. North Carolina had 36. Mississippi had 58. South Carolina had 44. And you can see a pattern that most of the states with most of the deaths
mm-hmm.
are in the South. And the South is where they lifted the restrictions when they had plenty of virus. And they just disregarded it. So they still have people dying now. From what they did 3 months ago. And they're not only dying now in those states, but those are the same states that they're saying, go to school, do it in class, and masks are optional. And so they're basically setting up the conditions so that they're going to infect the schools and the students are going to take the virus home. And they're going to set up a fall wave. And they're driving it because they, you know, it's freedom. They have the freedom to not wear the mask. It's all about freedom. They have the right to basically contaminate whoever they want. It's not bad enough that they don't care that they're contaminating themselves. But they think they have a right to just contaminate anybody they feel like because they don't want to wear a mask. That's their right. They've got the freedom to spread the virus. And that's why you've got all of these southern states. They have the bulk of the cases and the bulk of the deaths. And those are the ones that totally disregarded
mm-hmm.
the regulations. And even if the governor said, well, yeah, not a bad idea to wear the mask, they had enough people that listen to Trump and say, we don't really need the mask. This is a hoax anyway. It's not really, you know, that bad. You know, there's, you know, 40,000 people die in swimming pool deaths if you look over 10 years. And so what's the big deal if you have 40,000 deaths? Oh, well, I guess a little higher. What's the big deal if you got 60,000 deaths? Oh, what's the big deal if you got 80,000 deaths? What's the big deal if you got 100,000? Oh, we got 180,000 deaths, and they're predicting there's going to be 300,000 deaths by December.
What's the big deal
about 300,000? Right. What's the big deal about 300,000 deaths? And we're still in the first year. We haven't gotten through the fall wave, and we haven't gotten through what's going to happen in the spring and what's going to happen next fall. And
I'm seeing get your flu shot signs up now at Rite Aid stores, right in the parking lot, big signs. So
if flu season's coming up,
sure,
I mean, they know flu season usually starts in October, and the recommendation is if you're going to get a shot, you shouldn't wait until there's lots of virus around. You should get the shot now, get your antibodies before you're going to get infected, or because before the virus is circulating, and then when it starts, you know, going up in October, you'll already have the antibodies from that vaccination, and you won't be in a position where you got a flu shot and you're really working on the dead virus that you got injected, and now all of a sudden you got live virus because you got infected, and your immune system has to battle on both fronts. They basically have to, you know, make antibodies for the dead virus.
Well, that's going to be obviously very difficult for the average immune system to handle. Americans are obese.
Right.
They have semi-functional immune systems at best already.
Right. So it's a perfect storm for a disaster. That's why they recommend getting your flu shot early.
You did mention a while ago, it's a quad. It's no longer a tri. So they've guessed at four.
For several years now. Right.
Okay, they've guessed at four. They make their best guess, four different types of flu, and that's what the vaccine is supposed to protect again. Was it 2 years ago they missed on all? I think when it was still a trivalent, they missed on all three 1 year. But it is a bit of a dice roll.
With the trivalent, they were regularly missing on the B, because what would happen is that whichever strain was prevalent, people would get infected with it, and therefore that strain didn't do that well in the next season, because, you know, people had just been infected with it the prior season, and that kind of gave an opportunity for the other strain to take over. And the CDC would keep changing the virus they were using based on the prior year. So they would pick the one from the prior year, and then the other one would be dominant in the year that they vaccinated for, and they would have a mismatch. And they'd go back and forth. They'd change it each year, and the virus would change each year. And each year they would be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided, well, instead of being wrong over and over again, they're not even, you know, a coin flip would beat them. You know, you'd have better odds of picking the right one if you just flipped the coin than if you decided to make it against the one that was dominant the year before.
I want to go back to schools if I can here.
So then they just said they'd do both. So they did both. And that's how it got to be quadrivalent.
All right.
Yeah.
Schools start in September traditionally in the West and in many parts of the country. What are the schools doing in a uniform sense that you know about to try to prevent the spread of the virus? Are the students being distance-oriented in their classroom seating, or are they being forced to wear masks? What's going on in the schools? I don't know.
Well, I mean, I've got a sense of what's going on here in Pittsburgh, anyway. And I'm pretty sure they did the same thing in Florida. So I think this is fairly common. It's that they give the option. They go and they say, you know, you can sign up for in-class or you can sign up for virtual.
Online, yeah.
And when they do that, that reduces the number of students that are in class. And so it's somewhat easier to have some distancing for those students because the population is only like 50% of what it would, you know, normally be because half of the students aren't coming in. And so they use that lower density to do some social distancing. And then, they've got the signs up here, the signs that, you know, say something about, you know, let's fight this together, wear a mask, and keep it basic. And they have those signs all over the place. And I've gone by the high school here.
Boots on the ground.
You know, people aren't wearing a mask when they, you know, show up, you know, if they drive to school and they get out of their car, they put on their mask. I have yet to see anybody go inside the school without a mask. But when they're outside, then they generally aren't wearing a mask. It's the same thing with the sports. That the football teams are practicing and the coaches, the instructors, are wearing masks, and none of the players are wearing masks. And so that's kind of how they're doing it here. If they're inside, they're wearing masks. If they're outside, they generally aren't wearing masks. I'm not sure what they're doing on the bus. They gave the option for them to choose. I know in Florida, they had three options. They had one option that you could do virtual and use teachers that were basically were good at conveying the teaching materials virtually, and so they basically have a limited number that have very large classes, so they have it, and a lot of students tune into that. And then the other option is that you would have the local student, the local teacher. So you'd sign up for virtual, but it would be the teacher that you would normally have. You know, if you were in high school, you might already know who the other teachers are, you know, and you get different subjects. And you would end up with a teacher that, you know, other fellow classmates have had previously, and you could sign up for kind of a localized virtual. And the third option is to do virtual. And so and the most popular selection in Florida, well, I don't know if it's all Florida, I think it might have been in Dade County, that was to do it virtually with the local teacher. And I think they had something like 60% chose that. 20% or something chose in class, and 20% did virtual with a teacher that basically had larger classes. And so if you give that option, number one, the individuals can kind of, choose an option that fits what their situation is. I mean, some parents are working and, you know, they really can't have them home because they basically aren't really set up to do that, or they want them to go in class and they opt for that, and so they give the options and the parents make the decisions, or the parents and the students, and that's what they start out at. Now I don't know that they hold on to that. Because in Florida, the plan was that everybody started virtual for the first, like, 10 days. they weren't going to have any in classes until 10 days into the school year, so that everybody will be acquainted with, you know, what the virtual experience is, and, you know, what,
sure,
they'll be able to log into the classes, and they'll be adept at doing that and used to that. And then they go to their, you know, whatever their choice was, but they would have the experience of the virtual one, that if the in-class one ended up not working, and I think a lot of the faculty knew that the in-class one wasn't going to work, because they had very high rates. I mean, they had 20% positive rate on mm-hmm. the testing. And so they knew that, you know, even if the kids were wearing masks, they were going to show up and they were going to have positives the first day of class, and that invariably that would spread. And between the students that were positive and the students that were contacts of the positives, they would very soon have too high of an absentee rate, and they would have to shut it down. And that's what some of the colleges are finding out. And then other colleges are doing, you know, just what you said they couldn't do, which was they do test everybody. Uh-huh. And some of them are looking
well,
at what
I never said they couldn't do it. I was just wondering if they
It wouldn't be workable. Yeah, but some of them are looking at what the sports teams did. And there, mm-hmm. and in that case, they had kind of a point-of-care situation. They could use saliva, and they could just spit in a tube, and they could get it done essentially on-site. And right. they could get a result right away. And there's been those types of adaptations. I mean, I know that here in Pittsburgh, well, I think it's across the country, that there's some, like, Rite Aid offers testing, and it's fairly easy to get tested with them. And when they first set it up here in Pittsburgh, they had a couple of tents, and they had long lines, and you drove up to the tents, and they basically had tables, and they kind of, you know, gave you the basket to get your swab and your tube, and do the swabbing and put it back in the basket, and it went relatively slowly, and now they've modified that because some of the drugstores, they got the drive-through, and they just use the drive-through. So it's just like picking up a prescription with a drive-through. You drive up to the window, you give them mm-hmm. your name, and they go and they have the little, you know, arm that comes out with you normally pick up your prescription, and this time you just pick up your swab and your tube. You do the swab, you put it back in, and you go about your business, and it just seems to go quicker. They don't have to set up this whole mechanism, and they're able to process things at a higher rate, and they don't have to worry about setting up a tent, and, you know, like what happened in Florida, where they had to pull everything down because they had a hurricane coming, and so, you know, the structures weren't stable, so they had to stop testing and things like that. So I think there are adaptations so they can do more testing. The problem is that I think they're going to run into shortages. I mean, they ran into problems where they had big delays with getting test results back. And if it's going to take 10 days to get a result, it's pretty useless. And then there were mm-hmm. issues where they were running out of swabs, or they were running out of, you know, transport medium. And I don't know how well they've addressed those issues. I mean, that would be a good example where the government should step in and give them money to get more machines and more personnel mm-hmm. and manufacture more transport medium. Manufacture more swabs. None of these are rocket science type things. It's just, you know, you just have to make it worth their while to do, or, you know, their instructions. So there's funding. Yeah, yeah. They're not risking their capital. They're making, you know, millions or billions of swabs. and the government buys them and hands them out. But I mean, I think that might be part of the testing issue, because they're afraid that if there is a fall wave and they've got all these people that want to be tested for flu and all these people that want to be tested for COVID and all these people that want to be tested because they don't know which of the two they've got symptoms that might be flu, it might be COVID, and they want to know which one they've got, and they're just going to run out of supplies. And so their solution is to say, oh, you don't really need the test. don't worry about it.
Shortest distance between two points, right?
As far as Trump's concerned, he's just trying to get to November 3rd. He doesn't really care what happens after that. If he can convince enough people to go out and vote for him because he's got the pandemic under control, that's his goal.
Well, he's got a chore ahead of him, that's for sure. Yeah. Thank you, Henry. Yeah. We will talk to you tomorrow. Take care.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night. All right, that's it for tonight. And beep, beep. Good night, Henry. Tomorrow night is Thursday. What day? Is tomorrow night the 30th? Wow. No, it can't be. I'm on the wrong month. Tomorrow night's the 27th. Let's see. DB Kid. I think Jordan is going to be here tomorrow night. All right, well, we'll see. Thanks for being here. Take good care. And do take those supplements, vitamin D3, zinc, selenium, and NAC. Get that NAC before they make it illegal. And then colloidal silver, of course, and above all, Allicin C. Talk to you tomorrow. Take care.